start. Okay. Sheets in the back. Marcy, I'm going to tell everyone before we begin. I'm sure for many of us, it's not just coming back to this to the yeshiva for the day, but this room has a lot of very, very powerful connotations. So it was worth it. This is where Buchenstein used to get you. So we all sat in this room, most of us at one point or another, different stages. So just coming back to the yeshiva, the sheets in the back. Maybe make sure people are coming late. Just coming back and being in this room is worth the trip. So I was at Rav Lichtenstein's Kever yesterday, and feeling that closeness to some of the real work, so inspired by, and trying to live our lives after his example. Chazal tell us about many instances of people who succeeded at tshuva in a second, in a heartbeat. Many of us remember Rav Amital speaking about Rav Lazar ben Dordaya, the famous addict who was somehow awakened to tshuva by the Zona, in ways that previous friends, Rabbanim, parents, children were unable to awaken him, and he performs tshuva that last minute, and the baskol comes out, Yesh kona lama b'sha'achas, or b'leza ben dordaya, mezuman l'chay olam haba. And of course, tshuva is a second. It takes one quick second of authentic, genuine remorse, and mortification, and shame, sadness, coveting, wistfulness after HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it takes us at least 40 days to get to that point of authenticity, to get to that moment of being genuine, because we have to strip away so many layers of deceit, denial, ego, all the defense mechanisms that we apply during our whole year to ensure homeostatic, emotional homeostasis, have to be destabilized over tshuva. We have to break down ourselves. We have to cut away all the denial that we live with throughout the year just to make it to the next day. It's a healthy part of human life, is to deny our flaws and spin fictions about our real identities. It's necessary for our day-to-day survival. And if tefillah is referred to by Chazal as avoda shebelev, to denote that the scene or the location of that experience is in a person's emotion, I would probably dub tshuva avoda alhalev. Tefillah is avoda shebelev, because you're crying out to the Ribono Shel Olam from an emotional standpoint. It's not a cognitive experience. You're harnessing emotions. You're living with the emotions frame our experience, and those experiences serve as the platform for our encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But tshuva is an avoda alhalev. We're trying to work on our heart. And that's probably even more difficult than tefillah, because it's hard to work on your heart. It takes a high degree of self-awareness, emotional self-awareness, courage. What are we trying to work on? What are the conditions of the heart? Please take a sheet. Davin, maybe sit in the back just for the first 5 minutes and people come on like that and hand them sheets. So what are we working on over the next 2-3 days, the next 48 hours? What obstructions of the heart, what conditions of the heart should draw our attention? It's a very ambitious challenge in 45 minutes, but I wanted to identify at least five. Four, possibly five. Number one, we work on Arla Salev. And the Psukim and Sefer Devarim are quite aware of a condition called Arla Slavavcha. There's an Arla Sabasa that males have to circumcise to remove. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to Humalten as Arla Slavavcha. The Ribono Shel Olam wants us to use the same phrase, circumcise our hearts. There's a covering to the human heart. And in fact, according to the Smach, the Sefer Mitzvahs Katam is actually a mitzvah. One of the Tariag mitzvahs is Ramalatem Esar Alas Levavchem. Alas Levavchem probably refers to a person who lives a lifestyle which is insensitive, callous, disinterested in input, correction, critique. Sense that there are events that occur, there are messages we receive from others in our lives, from failures in our lives, messages from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we insulate our hearts. We direct our attention away from that type of input, either at a macro level or a micro level. Very often it's micro. There are certain areas of our life we should be receiving input and tochacha about, either spoken tochacha or implicit tochacha, and we actively deflect it. And then sometimes it's a macro type of our lesavavchem. We live a lifestyle which is just disinterested in any type of input or correction, very callous, very disconnected, very disinterested. So Arlas Levavchem has two pathologies to it. There's a specific area, we're facing a particular challenge, and we deflect input or correction, or we fall into a lifestyle, which is characterized by Arlas Levavchem. And the Rambam speaks about tshuva. So it's tautologically impossible for tshuva to be disqualified. No person can reach the stage beyond tshuva. Paro never reached that stage. Elisha ben Avuya, the Gemara in Chagiga, heard the baskol scream out, tshuva banim shavavim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu covets our tshuva. And his baskol, he heard chutz me'acher, but Rav Amital reminded us he didn't hear that. That was just part of the challenge. He thought he heard that. The part of the challenge of tshuva, we become so despairing, and we should become despairing, because tshuva really is about despair and sadness and frustration. It has to reach those levels. It can't be casual and relaxed. Tshuva has to be destabilized, has to be riotous, it has to be shame, it has to be disappointment, anger. There are a range of emotions that have to be awakened for real tshuva. It can't be casual and formulaic. It can't be clinical. So you reach that stage where you're so frustrated, you can fall into despair, and that's the satan. As we say, v'haser satan milfaneinu me'achareinu. Sometimes the satan stands in front of us, trying to prevent us from performing a mitzvah. Sometimes he stands behind us, and he pushes us to be more firm, to feel more bad about yourself. And if we're sinking to that pit of despair, and ultimately to forfeit in yourself, to give up hope on yourself. So when the Rambam talks about five experiences which are no el mipnei tshuva, they lock the door, they obstruct the path to tshuva, this is source number gimel, mahim chamisha devarim hanolim darchei tshuva b'fnei olseim. One of them, he writes, is hasonei es tochachos, line number two, source gimel. If you dislike input, you dislike tochacha, sheharei lohiniach lo derech tshuva. You haven't enabled, you haven't maintained pathways of input. They tell a story about the rich person in town in Europe who would lend all the aniyim money at unusually high usury rates. So they decided before Yom Kippur they were going to invite the famous magid from all over Europe to come give a shiur. And they sat this gvir in the front row, and the magid got up and gave a fire and brimstone, rousing speech about the transience of money and the futility of wealth. Ki lo bimoso yikach hakol. Lo yered acharav kibodo. He's sitting in the front row and all eyes in the village are peeled on this rich gvir. Hopefully he'll listen. Hopefully he'll get the message. The magid finishes the speech. He runs up and hugs the magid and kisses him on the front. I'm so happy you gave that cheer. Because all the people in the village, all they do all day is complain about the rates of interest that I charge them. And now they'll realize ki lo bimoso yikach hakol. They'll pay happily without all this frustration and bickering and concern. People hear what they want to hear. Some people translate messages. Some people are disinterested in listening to messages. Your heart can become insulated, can become unreceptive to input. People, when Chazal tells, so one of the definitions of a chaver, and we meet chaver at many levels, our spouses, our friends, our tamid, and people that you really listen to. People that you listen to, even when it's painful to listen. If you don't have that person in your life, unfortunately you're morally adrift because there's no potential for input, for improvement, for adjustment. Now sometimes that process is so difficult that we actually turn the tables on the Rabboni Shalom. The Rabboni Shalom instructs us, Umal Temes Arlas Levavchem. We turn back to Hashem and we ask Him, source number days, Umal Hashem Elokecha, Es Levavcha V'Es Levavzerecha. He promises us that when it's too hard for us, if we invite Him into our world, into our space, He'll actually circumcise our heart for us. Umal Hashem Elokecha. And of course, Es Levavcha V'Es Levavzerecha is the second best well-known acronym for Elul. Most people know Elul, Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li. Es Levavcha V'Es Levavzerecha. Es Levavcha V'Es Levav is, of course, the second place, runner-up acronym for Elul. And we can actually invite the Rabboni Shalom into our heart. We feel that the heart is the province of human decision-making, human discretion. But part of tshuva is opening your heart and asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to assist you, not just in responding to your heartfelt tshuva, but actually generating that sincerity. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does play a role in the human heart. So the first challenge of Arlas Levavchem, Umal Temes Arlas Levavchem, according to the Smak, there's a mitzvah asei min HaTorah to be someone who's interested in tochacha. If you don't take tochacha, you're a mavatel, a mitzvah asei. Some people are always looking for, second you tell them something, they always have an answer. They're always looking to deflect or to justify. They're not even listening, let alone receiving. They're just looking right away to provide a reworking or a reprocessing of what you've said. And we just read about it in the Tochacha. Yachach Hashem, source number Dalad, B'shigaon, V'ivaron, you'll be blinded, you'll be insane. With a Simhon Levav, and you'll wonder about why things are happening. We're saying, Al-Khed, Al-Khed Shechatan, Al-Lufanecha, B'simhon Levav, all the wanderings in our heart and in our minds that are inappropriate. Some of them are theological. Some of them are just when things happen to us and events occur, and we wonder, why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu subjecting me to this? Why am I suffering? I deserve better. And sometimes we're not aware of either the personal level or collective level. Remember the famous keynotes that we recited on Tisha B'Av, where after every time we complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Avos complain, and the Kina, Hashem tells the Avos, you're telling me about the schus, did you see how they behaved? Did you see the Avodah Zarah? Did you see the Shrichus Damim? Did you see? It's the same thing. We're very astute as to how we suffer. We're sometimes less mindful as to how we betrayed. And that's the level of Atima Salev. If you see Rashi, in Parshas Kisavo, source number A, when the Torah talks about Timon Levav, which is someone wandering, Rashi talks about Arla Salev, Otem Alev. Otem Alev causes Simon Levav. If your heart is sensitive, if your heart is attuned, so typically you'll be able to contextualize and frame suffering and events because there's causality, there's consequence. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending me a message. This isn't indiscriminate. This isn't serendipitous. This isn't random. There's a purpose. But if it's in the Timo Salev, then you're laser-focused on the tragedy and the suffering, and you're unable to connect the dots to the trigger or to the instigation of that suffering. So part of our Avodah Yom Kippur is the struggle against Arlas Levavchem. It's to literally perform Bris Milah, Unumatem is Arlas Levavchem. The second condition of the heart is Ramam Masalev. The smog, not the smock, the smog, Sefer Mitzvah Gadol, Vein Moshe Mikutzi, had completed his Sefer on Mitzvahs, and he was visited by a Malach the night before he was about to publish. And the Malach said, you forgot a Mitzvah. Which Mitzvah did he forget? Typically, Midos Ros are not Asr. There's no Isr to be jealous. It's just a corrosive Midah. If you're jealous, you'll live a life of jealousy, and it's a terrible way to lead your life. There's no Isr to feel anger. There's an Isr to act on jealousy. That's L'Sachmo. There's an Isr to act on anger. That's Tosef and Yosef are consulting someone. But there's no Isr to be angry. You're consumed with anger. We all know people who live their lives as angry people. There's no Isr to be cynical. It's obsessive. And you become an angry or cynical and bitter person. But there's one Midah which the Malach told the Smag is actually Asr. Which is that Midah? The Midah of Gaiva. Based on the Pasuk, V'ram Levavecha, source number Aleph, V'shachachta Hashem Elokecha. So much of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, two emotional pivots to our relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam. One is Avas Hashem, one is Yirat Shamayim. Avas Hashem, various different strategies, but essentially that intimacy that's born of recognizing the value in Avodas Hashem, as the Rambam says. Also, it's Emes of Neshu, Emes and Nechus Tshuva. So if I recognize how valuable religion is, and I understand religion, and I can synchronize the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with human interest, then I love him for our Shabbat Rabbanim Mikol Amin Benasan Lanu Estarasa. Yerushalayim is the inverse. Yerushalayim is a hierarchy. Hashemayim Shemayim Hashem, Yeraz Hashem Lefnei Adam. Hashem is a mystery. We can't understand that mystery. We can't penetrate that riddle. And that mystery lends to submission. I submit to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because I realize it to be a will beyond my own capacity to even understand or even conjure. And therefore, I submit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The image of the Sula Mutzav Arza, Ve'elokim Nitzav Alav, Yaakov is on the bottom, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on top of the ladder. Every chait ruptures that hierarchy. Every chait inverts the hierarchy. Chait, essentially, at every level, is an assertion of personal need above the need of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whether it's a theological chait, where you believe you understand more than Ribbono Shel Olam, it could be a chait of taiva, where your personal need right now is so powerful, so potent, so overwhelming, that it overrides the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It could be more subtle chatayim, like laziness. A person who's lazy, remember, the only thing I ever heard Rav Aaron say he hates is people who are lazy. Because they're not able to summon the energy to last us with some kono. At some level, there's a diminishing or diluting of the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or a shrinking of that gap, that hierarchy, that is so fundamental to Yerusha Mayim. Which is why the Rambam was so extreme in trying to limit arrogance. The Rambam, of course, is well known for the middle road approach, which people so often misunderstand. I'll dive in a little bit. I won't dive in that much. I'm a Rambam guy in the middle of the road. I'll do some mitzvahs. I won't do other mitzvahs. I'll keep kosher, but I'll eat out in restaurants. You know, the Rambam is turning over in his grave. He never used the word, not again, not again. It's not what I meant. Middle of the road, middle of the road. You know, the Rambam is in Olam Haba clapping Al Chayt every Yom Kippur. Al Chayt Shana Tasin Avonecha, the middle of the road. Of course not. What he meant is calibration of human personality. Not mitzvahs, not Torah, not tefillah. When it comes to human personality, should you be garrulous, should you be quiet? Somewhere in the middle. Should you spend all your money or should you be frugal? Somewhere in the middle, should you? It's a way of calibrating. Every personality trait should be calibrated and modulated to be balanced. Except for two. One of the two traits the Rambam expected, extreme, radical conditioning. One of them was arrogance. And he learned it from a pasuk and a mishnah. How is Moshe referred to? Vayish Moshe, Anav Miod. Not Anav, but Anav Miod. And then Levitas Ishyavna added to the pasuk in Balos, Vayish Moshe, Anav Miod. What did Levitas Ishyavna say? Miod, Miod, Havish Lohurach. If someone write a sefer today, Miod, Miod, Miod. Everyone's adding another Maod. At some point, the Maods are going to run out. It's going to become too redundant. Beethoven's Fifth ends at some point. Can't get the same note again and again. But Maod, 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 have a Shval Ruach. And the reason the Rambam felt this is because of such an abrogation of the hierarchy of Yerushalayim, which is so central to the DNA of a healthy emotional relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And Chet wrecks that hierarchy. When Reish Lakish spoke about Tshuva Me'ava and Tshuva Me'ira in the Gemara in Yom Daf Pei Vav, and Tshuva Me'ava is the superior form of Tshuva because it converts our avonos into sechlios. It's for a different conversation. But when he was referring to Tshuva Me'ira, he wasn't just referring to the fear of Onesh. That's a juvenile Tshuva. That's an infantile Tshuva. That's a Tshuva of Ninveh. In the sense that Ninveh had no sincerity, no earnestness. The king decreed, everyone wore sackcloth, the animals wore sackcloth. The show. The Tshuva of Para. How transient was his tshuva? 12 o'clock he did tshuva, by 6 o'clock on the Akshat Slave Paro. Reish Lakish is referring to a real sincere tshuva, a really elegant tshuva, trying to recover the Yiras Shamayim, which Shechet wrecks, which Shechet dismantles. The sense of hierarchy in so much of our Yom Kippur is an attempt to restore that hierarchy. Manu machayenu, ma yishenu, ma kochenu, ato melech kel chai v'kayam, anu yamenu kitzel over, ato shresecha lo yitamu, so much of it is trying to recalibrate Godless Hashem and Katnus Adam, where Chet has marred some of that.
So why do we elevate the Tshuva of Ninveh on such a pedestal in Yom Kippur?
Because I think we're trying to universalize Tshuva. It's a wake-up call to Am Yisrael. Remember, the Abar Benel says the reason Yonah ran away is because he didn't want to embarrass Am Yisrael.
Yeah.
As he realized that Ninveh did Tshuva, Am Yisrael was too inflexible. But from our vantage point, A, because we want to awaken Am Yisrael, too, is we want to hear of Aaron say Mafter Yonah. That was always an event to hear of Lichtenstein say Mafter Yonah. Right? That was one of the highlights of our Yom Kippur. That's obviously not the reason we decided Yom Kippur. So that's an attempt, and that's why so much of Yom Kippur is geared towards, on the one hand, trying to limit Gaiva, and on the other hand, trying to limit Kas. The Svarim say that during the Yom Narayim, a person should be very, very careful not to have kas. What is kas against a person, a friend, a Talmud, kas against a spouse, kas. Persons try very hard to limit kas and meribos. They try very careful. A lot of people are home together. It's a lot of tension and a lot of meals. They all say, from Jews don't need a survivor show on an island. It's called Yom Tov. When you go to the same house, who's going to survive the Yom Tov, the 2-3-day Yom Tov? It's very important to try to avoid any level of kas. Because Kas is the other midah that asserts self and ego above the needs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal tell us, Kol HaKoes, Kilu Oved Avodah Zarah. So I'm not going to describe all the Makaros, I'll talk a little bit about Parah, about the reference then. But that's the second challenge, not the challenge of Arlas Aleith, insensitive, callous, deflective, disinterested, again, either the micro or the macro level. So much of our tshuva has to cascade at both of those levels. We're sometimes very micro in our processing of tshuva. Shamnu, bagadnu, gazalnu, alchet shechatanu lefonech, abil, alchet. This is a macro tshuva as well. Where are we headed in life? Even if all the dots connect, what's the vector of the line? The dots may be connecting properly, but the vector may be inappropriate. Sometimes people are more interested in macro tshuva, and they don't have an appetite or courage for micro tshuva. to inspect and to scrutinize. A real tshuva is both a tshuva of a general direction, where do we stand in life, and a tshuva of behavior, and mitzvahs and averos. The third area of our lave is shrius lave. And this is based on the pasuk v'haya b'shamo estivrei el azos v'sparech bil v'avon le'mar pasuk in parashas nitzavim shalom nihali ki b'shrius libi elech. Now keep in mind this is very different than arlas alev, because arlas alev refers to someone who doesn't even receive input. There's no critique. There's no entry point. Romas alev may refer to someone who listens but always presupposes and prepositions his own needs and ego above. It's a response. You're listening to input, you're tuned and attentive, but you halt or thwart the processing and the ultimate recovery because there's just too much arrogance. Shrewa sleepy, what does Rashi say, shrewa sleepy? Rashi says, the last part of part two, again, Nisparech bil vavo, the beginning of the pasuk, sounds like he is struggling. There's a struggle that Arla Salev doesn't suggest. Arla Salev suggests someone who's so insulated, so disinterested, that there's no entry of any input, any critique, or any trigger point. Here there's a trigger point, but there's a response. Visparech bil vavo, he listens to the events, but he justifies. Ki bishrius libi elech. What does Rashi say? Bemaris libi. I would call that self-arbitration. Shrius libi comes from the term to see. Rashi quotes the pasuk in Balak, Asherenu velo ata. I see, Bilam says, but it's not immediate. It'll happen in the end of days. And sheyikrei lachem b'achris hayamim. So, some people self-arbitrate. Namely, they listen to input, but ultimately they can't accept authority, they can't accept the fact that maybe their position is incorrect. If we, let's say, contrast our world, let's say, with the Haredi world, so we all sense that there's something a little bit disproportionate about Das Torah, about seeking counsel for medical issues, financial decisions, romance. These are decisions we feel lay far, far afield from rabbinic authority. And in that world, for many different reasons, many different influences, rabbinic authority has invaded and infiltrated that area of human experience. But then we look back at our world and our reality, and how many people in our world have absolutely no moral authority or no rabbinic authority, literally no ability to submit. And unfortunately, we sense, through the fault of rabbis and people, and I don't think we're one integrated community. Our children are rabbis, our parents are, we're all the same people. It's not as if there are two teams, it isn't color war. But we've been unable to create a healthy respect and submission to Rabbanim. And part of it is self-empowerment, part of it is we feel we're very democratic, but where that doesn't exist, it can very, very easily sink into shrius libi elech, where people just are self-arbiters and every decision is their own, be it moral decisions, be it religious decisions, hopefully not halachic decisions. Once it bleeds into halachic decisions, then the entire integrity of the halachic process begins to disintegrate. But it's an infectious process. If it starts, you shouldn't ask Rabbanim or moral voices about purchasing a car or marrying a woman, because those are areas that are far afield from any, marrying a woman, facility, financial decisions, medical decisions. But even areas that are outside of halacha, but they have moral connotations, should be addressed in people who hopefully are steeped in moral sensitivity as endowed by Torah. Not only Torah morality, people could be moral and sensitive on their own. We all know people who are very ethical, very wise, very morally attuned, even without being Talmid Chacham. But you'd hope to find people whose moral sensibilities are infused by a robust and expansive Torah background. Although I should say that at one time we once asked Reb Lichtenstein what he thinks about Das Torah. And we're expecting him to say he rejects it, he doesn't believe in it. To our surprise, he says he believes fully in Das Torah, he just doesn't think there's anyone to provide Das Torah in our generation. We were very surprised by that statement, but again, logically, if you really feel like Torah is the source for all human knowledge and all human wisdom, then at least logically, someone who's well-versed in Torah, maybe beyond dimensions of anything we're familiar with, anything we recognize, but in theory, a Vilna Gaon type of knowledge, or a Rambam type of knowledge, or a Bikiva type of knowledge, would be able to impart wisdom and advice capability in fields that don't directly seem to dovetail or overlap with Torah. But this is a very, very different danger than the Arla Salev. Arla Salev is someone that's just morally disinterested, morally autonomous, beyond reproach, beyond access, beyond tochacha. Here, there's someone who always sides with themselves and always sides with their own opinion. And b'shriros libi elech, l'man sefos haravas atzmeh. Hashem promises that, that's the type of lifestyle, not because it's insensitive, but because it's so confident and swaggering and self-promotional, that ultimately sins of omission become sins of commission, l'man sefos haravas atzmeh. The fourth type of danger in our hearts is called znusalev. Lo sasir achare lebavchem, v'achare nechem, asher atem zonim achareim. Now what's interesting here is that unlike the other three conditions of our hearts, here the heart has an accomplice. There's a wingman, and that's the eyes. This isn't arla salev, or shura salev, or Rama Salev. This is Lo sasir achare lebavchem, v'achare nechem. What is Nusalev? Nusalev refers to seeking something beyond your familiar day-to-day, repetitive, monolithic reality. One's danger, great danger of boredom. Real success in life, real achievement in lives, and repeating our steps day after day after day, the same, one after another, that's what our real accomplishment, our real content lies. But our eyes wander. Our curiosity is piqued. Our eyes see things. Not everything we see settles into our heart. But some of the things we see, just out of curiosity, just out of interest. And sadly enough, today, curiosity, although we value it as a healthy aspect of human experience and human inquisitiveness, unfortunately today curiosity leads us to very, very dark and dangerous places. I remember as a high school boy growing up in Brooklyn, so we used to get off of the D train on Avenue J, and there was a candy store right under the train. So I used to go on Fridays into the candy shop to get Raisinets or to get Wise potato chips, whatever we got. And then there was the onion rings, and that was the boundary, because the onion rings were right in the middle of the store, the end of the potato chip section. And after the onion rings were the let's say the bad magazines, the inappropriate magazines. So everyone knew that you couldn't pass the onion rings. You had to stop at the onion rings. Some people passed the onion rings, having eaten those onion rings and taking 3 weeks to get your breath back. You should have stopped before the onion rings. But everyone knew you can't walk past the onion rings, and some boys did. And as you know, in high school, there are those who do those, you know. But it was a very clear demarcation. There are no more onion rings in our lives. We sit in front of a computer and we're two clicks away from passing by the onion rings. And it's not just the internet, but it's a world of curiosity and a world of exposure, especially in our community, where we tout exposure and encounter and we compromise and we surrender so much of our purity for the sake, for the value of exposure and encounter. And we can all remember of Amital screaming or chanting, V'tahir libeinu, and I know how to do tshuva, and I know how to achieve kapara, but it's very hard to, how do you perform tahara? How do you expunge all the things we've seen that we wish we hadn't, and all the things we've heard that we wish we've hadn't? And that's a product of eyes that wander, and eyes that are bored by the day-to-day familiar reality. In the local context of znus, the sociologists call the seven-year itch. At a certain point, males become, in a non-structured environment, males become curious if some other female co-worker or someone in their lives. And that's viznusalev, and that needs eyes as an accomplice, because it isn't innate. The other traits are innate. Arrogance, insensitivity, self-arbitration. This is wandering eyes and lusting hearts, or desirous, covetous hearts. And without the eyes, our hearts wouldn't covet and wouldn't wander. And in our world, we have a name for it. It's called fantasy. And fantasy is very, very glimmering, shiny, and fairy dust. And any of the people who popular culture dresses up as magnificent, fantastic, beautiful, attractive, athletic, successful, I promise you, if they walked into the room right now, they'd seem very ordinary. Pre-Photoshop, pre-headlines, pre-all the fairy dust that the media sprinkles upon them to make them seem larger than life. They would seem really ordinary people. They wouldn't overwhelm us with their beauty, with their talent, with their intelligence. Everyone in this room is more intelligent, probably more attractive, more well put together and dignified than any of these people. But there's a collusion between fantasy because we're bored, and not just bored. When I say bored, it's not just bored in the adolescent way, but there's an angst that humanity is still struggling with, probably since World War I, when its pivot was removed and it lost its focal point for after so many centuries. And we're still looking for meaning, and at a certain point, certainly post-World War II, or in the last 30 years, society decided, let's give up the hunt for meaning and just entertain ourselves so we don't have to think about meaning. So we can entertain ourselves endlessly. The Baron, the great idol of American culture, Steve Jobs, accomplished nothing. He just allowed us and enabled us to entertain ourselves more facile, more facility and greater ease. So he's all of a sudden become a folk hero and a cultural icon because he's been able to feed the monster of entertainment. So when we fight, how much of our lives have we spent chasing fantasy because we can't deal with the monolithic, monotonic day-to-day, which is where real experience lies. Our families, same minion day in, day out, the same job day in, day out, the same job as food week in, week out, the same children. And how much of our time do we spend looking for adventure or exotic or something that takes our minds off of the here and now and makes our heart flutter, but ultimately turns our heart into a lave, a sheretem zonim acharehem. The fourth condition of the heart, again, very briefly, according to Gemara Menachos, if you want to see the effect of fantasy on display, a very famous Gemara Menachos, essentially about a man who visits a well-known zona, a notorious zona, and he climbs up one bed after another, and each bed has more precious metals, gold and silver and neon lights and sparkles and fireworks, and essentially he's caught in this snare of fantasy until his tzitzis slap him on the face, and the pasuk Hashem is called Mitzvah Hashem, and somehow that tzitzis has a recovering or corrective effect. The fifth condition of a heart, and we'll try to get to six if possible, we should have enough time, we're moving a little quickly for the sake of comprehensiveness, but I'm sure there's a lot here for you to ponder after the share with these makaras and other makaras, is a lev ha'evan, a heart of stone. Now don't confuse a lev ha'evan with a ara lev. You may think that they both describe insensitivity, but they're insensitivity for different reasons, as well as the fact that lev ha'evan provides an additional component. Yechezkel promises, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, V'nasati lachem lev echad, V'nasati lachem Lev basar, I will remove the lev ha'evan, v'asirosi lev ha'evan mibsaram, v'nasati lahem, lev basar. Now what is a lev ha'evan, as opposed to a ara lev? Well, on the one hand, a lev ha'evan is a heart that's lazy. An evan has no energy to it. An evan is inanimate, has no spirit to it, doesn't rise, doesn't perform, doesn't... A lev ha'arel is a heart that could be alive, that could be beating, that could be very potent and passionate, but it's just, it's concealed, it's insulated, and nothing enters. A lev ha'evan is a heart that's just lazy. Now laziness doesn't just have to reflect in lack of physical. There's an intellectual laziness, there's an emotional laziness, there's an imaginative laziness. In fact, the real challenge for most of us isn't really physical, Zwizus. The real challenge is emotional Zwizus. And emotional Zwizus is not just in accepting challenges, but innovating, finding new identities to become, and being able to discharge security blankets of our past. So often we don't change because we're too frightened of change. And we cling and clutch persistently to who we were in the past. And we're afraid to take on new identities and new challenges for ourselves. So much of our zvizos, I would call probably courage. It's probably the way I would articulate it. Religious courage. The courage to find new identities and new opportunities to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just within the personality that we currently possess, but there was in Europe, they used to refer to tshuva as nish zu sein a besserer mensch, nor zu sein an anderer mensch. Tshuva is not just to be a better person, but it's to be a different person. And that's the interplay between Chodesh and Shofar. V'chodesh ha'shvi, v'chad l'chodesh, is chachum masechem, and Shofar, which doesn't appear regarding Rosh Hashanah, is shapur masechem. And it appears in our shapur masechem, v'yam chodesh ha'shvi. And of course, as we all heard from Rav Lichtenstein many times, is really a third level, not just to become a new person, but also to become that previous person. Some of Varun's famous sikhot about trying to turn back the clock and re-achieve some of the innocence that we surrender through chet. So it's not just becoming a new person, becoming an earlier person. If you want to add to that phrase in Europe, nish zu sein a besser Mensch, nish zu sein ein anderer Mensch, zu sein a friedlicher Mensch, to be an earlier person, to try to find some of that early innocence which may have been compromised by some of our failures and some of our flaws. So Leva Evan is a heart that's stone-like, it has no energy, it has no movement, it has no there's no kinesis to it, it's very static, it's very immovable. And what it also refers to, and this is something Rabbi Soloveitchik discussed extensively, is when the Sar Lazazel is pushed off the mountain, it falls backwards to the bottom of the cliff, to the bottom of the ravine. The Rav saw this as a metaphor, because very often our chet is not based on some emotional decision, rather allowing ourselves to be affected by forces beyond us, social forces, emotional forces, other types of forces, and just not responding. And of course, the most powerful and ubiquitous force in human experience is gravity. So by subjecting Yisar Lazazel to gravity, you're demonstrating that so much of chet is opposing maybe external forces and showing the strength of character and the conviction not to allow yourself to be drawn by other forces. So many of the other ideas I've described are forces within the human soul. Arrogance, insensitivity, haughtiness, self-arbitration. But very often we just get pulled along and we don't have the strength of character to resist. And resisting gravity is resisting those forces. Sar Lazazel serves as a metaphor for our inability, and hence it's the exemplar, the prototype of chet. Well, Leva Evan suggests that as well. Stone has no resistance to it, and when it falls, it plummets to the earth. And Chazal speak about this when Yaakov removes the Evan, Vayigal Evan, Al Pi Abeir, and Parshas Vayetze. The Be'er isn't a well, the Evan isn't an Evan, but the Be'er is a human heart, and the Evan is the Yetzihara, which is Nidmel Evan, according to one day in the Gemara and Sukkah. Yetzihara is compared to an Evan. What does it mean, Yetzihara is compared to an Evan? Because so much of our Yetzihara, it's just that. It's just, on the one end, laziness, as connoted by an Evan. On the other end, it's also just inability to resist forces that act upon us, that come into our lives. So those are the first four aspects of our heart that we try, amongst others, we try to work on Yom Kippur. Our lesser life, insensitivity to input and to critique, whether verbal or whether just events that occur. Ramamus Alev, haughtiness and cockiness. Shiras Alev, self-arbitration. I'm sorry, five. Znus Alev, where our hearts and our eyes just wander for adventure, fantasy, exotic, and sometimes we travel to very, very dangerous places. And then finally, Leva Evan. Now, I want to spend 5 minutes describing a sixth aspect of the heart. It's a little bit different, but it's a revolutionary idea which Rav Amital would talk about very, very frequently in Ila. And I have to tell you, I heard this so many times, and it took me many, many years just to realize how revolutionary the idea was. And I never do this, but I'll do it once. I never promote any of the shiurim I've given. I record a lot of shiurim online. But I strongly, strongly recommend you listen to the shiur online. You can send me an email. It's on Yutara. Because it totally changed my ne'ilah. And it took me a while to realize how much it changed my ne'ilah. Rav Amital would always quote the pasuk in Shir HaShirim in Perek Dalet, Perek Hei, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the male, comes knocking at the door, told Adi Dofek, after so much innuendo and hinting, and have you seen my lover, have you seen the female? Finally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is more forward, and the female is lazy. Finally, she awakens and rises. My fingers are aromatic because I'm so passionate and excited. And the pasuk says, source number 6, part Aleph. And I'm holding the lock of the door and I'm turning it, and I can feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the male on the other side. And of course, if you know the continuation of Parakeh, Dodicha Makavar, Hashem disappears and we blow another opportunity. Rav Amital would quote the following Medrash to us. It's a Medrash that doesn't appear in the classic Midrashim, which is quoted by Rabbeinu Bechaya, the Talmud of the Ramban. Kamti ani liftoach ledodi v'yadai natfu mor. Kamti ani liftoach ledodi zeyotzer. That's Shachas. Yadai natfu mor. My fingers are full of spice and perfume. Zem Mosef. Etzvosai mar over, zem mincha. Al kapos ha-man'ul, man'ul, ne'ilah. Now, there's a lot to this medrash, but in large strokes, what it describes is Yom Kippur is a process, and the process reaches the climax during ne'ilah, and the drama of that process is about the male trying to rendezvous with the female. Who's the male? Who's the female? Am Yisrael. And that climax occurs during ne'ilah. And there's a door. And on one side of the door is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the male. On the other side of the door is Am Yisrael. And who's more interested in that rendezvous? At the very least, there's equivalent interest, but at least the narrative suggests that the male is far more active and far more solicitous, in this case, in the female. He desires that encounter, that connection. And ne'ilah is the moment that perhaps the door will or won't be opened. Now, I always had a very hard time with ne'ilah, because it seems so jarring and discrepant with the rest of Yom Kippur. Because the rest of Yom Kippur, you feel that proximity, that intimacy. Kiam melch yoshev akisei rachamim, salachti kidvarecha, kerachim avalbanim. And then I was always taught ne'ilah, as probably most of us are, that the gates are closing, and the sun is setting, and you're trying desperately to slip in that extra tefillah before Hashem locks the gates. So all of a sudden, within 5 minutes, Hashem has gone from an avarachamim to a gatekeeper. And those wrought iron gates are closing. Obviously, it has to end. There's nothing terrible about it, but it's just so emotionally dichotomous with what I felt for 23 hours. And here's Rav Amital saying, no, that's not where the real drama is occurring in the gates of Shemayim. Where's the real drama occurring? In the gates of your heart. Hashem wants to come into your heart. And you're on the other side of your heart. And He has the key to all the gates in this world. But there's one gate He doesn't possess the key to, and that's the gate of your heart. And the real challenge of ne'ilah is, can you open your heart and embrace the Ribono Shel Olam? Can you feel that connection? And Hashem wants that more than you do. Hashem is the male here. Kam teni leftoch ledodi. Hashem is dodi, kol dodi dofek. Hashem is knocking, and Hashem is on the other side of the door. And all of a sudden, the altitude of Yom Kippur, Tfilas Ne'ilah, switched for me. It used to be a very, very different altitude. It used to be up in Shemayim, trying to hold open gates of Shemayim and slip in its tefillah. And now it became a very internal process, where I've tried to build this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Maybe I have opened my heart, maybe I haven't opened my heart, but this is the last opportunity. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on the other side of the door, and I'm inside of myself, and can I open my heart and feel Hashem's presence? And that will be the real success to my Yom Kippur. It's a completely revolutionary way to view ne'ilah, and one which is much more integrated, much more consistent with what we've been experiencing until ne'ilah. Rather than just thinking, of course, part of it is the gates of heaven. I'm not in any way denying or rejecting that image and that process. But it's a whole different front and a whole different sense of trying to open doors. And I heard it so many years, I never registered about how revolutionary it was until I just stepped back last year. And I read a few of them and I said, this is really different. And it changed my ne'ilah dramatically last year, because it wasn't about wrought iron fences and tools slipping in before the gatekeeper, mean and insensitive, would lock the doors and disallow any future tefillos. It was about just trying to generate that openness, that psichas halev, psach libi b'sarasecha, v'aranini b'sarasecha, v'dalek l'beidim b'sarasecha, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could rendezvous with me, or at least reach the climax of that rendezvous.
The problem is that the end of the story in Shir Shirim is not so good,
right?
At least at this point. So we don't want to get to the ending.
Put it this way, if the ending in Shir HaShirim had been successful, we wouldn't be here, we'd be in the Beis HaMikdash. So Shir HaShirim refers to an open-ended proposition, and Am Yisrael continually failed to meet that, but now we want to try to change the ending, we want to try to rewrite the ending of Shir HaShirim, or else if Shir HaShirim had ended on a more positive note, Jewish history would have ended many, many years ago in Utopia, if we'd been living in Utopia. Mirat Hashem, we should one day live in Utopia in the Beis HaMikdash. Until then, we'll have to deal with just 24 hours of Utopia, which is Yom Kippur, which is the closest we'll taste to our eternity and our immortality. We don't have to worry about food and drink and body and pettiness. And Mirat Hashem, we should reach a day of Yom Shekula Menucha and be in the Beis HaMikdash once again with the Kohen Gadol. See you in the Tov with everyone.
It's been also announced that Rav Yochanan Korach will keep his shiur. on the Bhima in the Vidya.